Iowa everywhere.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Live from the Channel Seed Studios.
Channel Seed Studios.
This is Jared and Jabo and Iowa Everywhere. Jared Stansberry.
Jared Stansberry.
Jordan Bohannon.
Jordan Bohannon.
Together on Iowa Everywhere.
Channel Seed. Seedsmanship at work.
Welcome to the podcast, Channel Seed Studios. Jared Stansberry. What's up, Jordan Bohannon?
Hi, Jared.
It is Man, I'm not saying this is the flu game because these are different kind of circumstances, but the air conditioner in my house is broken. I'm down bad, bro.
Oh, it's like 100 today, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. The thermostat the other day said that it was 81 degrees in the house. I've been sweating, dude. I just got a rind on me, you know?
You do look a little grimy now that I see. Like, you, I feel like you have a little sweat on your little press.
On my brow, bro. You know, I feel like a baseball pitcher right now. I got to wipe my brow and rub it up on the ball, do all that stuff. Like, I'm down bad. And
hey, I have a leather chair. You're here, though. Chair. You're 10 toes down. Like, you're committed.
Yeah, I'm ready to go because I'm a gamer. I know what time it is. It's and it's time to go. What's been going on this last week, dude? How's everything going?
Went up to the lake with my girlfriend and starting doing some workouts with these kids in the area. I'm excited, man. I think this is kind of the first time I've done like these like individual sessions like consistently, you know, like have the same group for like the whole summer. I mean, it's something small, but man, I think it's so cool. You know, I've been to the Y up here in Spirit Lake a couple times and seeing like the kids, they just got out of school and watching them play basketball like out there. It's so cool, man, to look back and like I'll brag a little bit, just like how far I've come too. Cause I feel like I was exactly one of those kids out there just chucking up shots at the Y. And now like, you know, I have some kids coming up to me and asking for pictures and autographs in this area. It's just, it's a cool feeling, man. Like it's something hopefully I've inspired a younger generation. And it's cool to see, like, I was literally one of those kids that are there now. It's a really cool feeling.
You got any young hoopers to tell us about?
Hopefully after the summer, man. I got a group of five I'm working out here. So maybe we'll have the next Michael Jordan come out of Okoboji, Iowa.
Man, wouldn't that be something?
Of all places,
wouldn't that be something? We've got plenty to get to on the show today. Gary Barta announcing his retirement from the University of Iowa late last week. A phenomenal news dump on a Friday at like in the morning, right before a 3-day weekend. But what did you think of the news of Gary Barta's retirement?
You know, it's funny. I was golfing at Finkbein, the University of Iowa's course on campus, that Thursday. And I was playing with Coach Sparrow, one of my old assistants at Iowa, who's retired now. And we're coming off the 10th hole, and we're looking for my ball, of course. And it's left in the first hole fairway. And of all people, it's Gary Barta with some powerful people in the university that are donors. So I got to meet them. And he seemed super cool, man. Like, he wasn't, like, worried about anything. Like, he was all easygoing. Obviously, you're on a golf course. You don't have a lot of emotion out there. But we talked to him for, like, 10 to 15 minutes and probably held some people up behind us. But I was shocked because it was funny. We end up talking to him, and I was like, Coach Sparrow, you think his time's coming, like when he's going to retire? Because, you know, he's been there for 17 years. I don't think that's talked about enough. AD is hardly ever there for that long at a school. So that alone, I was like, Sprue, you think it's time that he's calling it quits? And literally then within 24 hours, it happens. So
maybe he decided during that round of golf, he's like, you know what? I've had enough.
Yeah,
I'm just gonna play golf.
Not cut out for it. But don't know, man. I think his, you know, we see a lot of people. I'm sure Iowa State fans have their own opinion on him and you as well. But, you know, I saw Chris Hassel say some stuff about him. And, you know, he's always been a very, very fair man. Like, to me, to anyone I know that has interacted with him, he's always been a very fair man. And when he's – I think what gets lost is how great he's made – the athletics department at the University of Iowa, because it's truly special, right? Like the teams he's had, like from field hockey all the way up to football, like he's prepared a very, very good athletic department program. Like the program as a whole, University of Iowa, I don't think has ever been a better place from sport to sport. Right. But what's get lost in it is, and it's really shameful, is what's happened to me between the lines, right? Like with the lawsuits, obviously the gambling incident right now is kind of sending him his way out as it feels like, but he's been a very, very successful AD, very accomplished AD. He's done a lot. You know, obviously he's on the committee for the college football playoffs as well. I think everything in between the lines has gotten lost into how successful he's been. I mean, you kind of have to be, right, for 17 years, Jared, to be at a Power 5 school as an athletic director. That's impressive as its own. So, I mean, I wish him the best. Like I said, he's always been a fair man to me, always been grateful for my opportunity to play there, and I'm curious to see who they hire next.
Yeah, I mean, I think the lawsuits and things like that obviously are significant black eyes. Like, I think that's why that's their first thought, you know. And I'm not going to argue with you that he hasn't built a good athletic department, because he absolutely has. But it just is, there's some of those things that it's hard to overlook, you know, when you're looking at the culture of a place, I guess. I don't know. Like, but I don't know him, you know, so it's hard for me to say that with any certainty. But just as an outsider, it just is like, yeah, you've had success, but you've also had some things that, you know, really didn't make the school look very good.
Right. Yeah. And I'm not denying any of those. Obviously the lawsuits happened. There's been settlements. There's been issues within their own right. Like Brian Ferentz's contract, like amendment. That's something that's we've never heard of in athletic history, really, of an offensive coordinator being held to a certain standard points wise where he's fired. So, I mean, you look at down the lines, there are all those little things that built up through the years that has taken away the spotlight of his. But like I said, again, you know, it's hard. It's obviously easy to dwell on what's happened, right, with the cons of him being the AD, but there definitely is some applause to behold, right, still, with all the allegations that have occurred in the lawsuits that, you know, he's hired Kirk Ferentz, whether Iowa fans like him or not. He's one of the most long-tenured coaches in college football history, and
he didn't hire Kirk Ferentz.
Like, what? You're right, but okay.
He hired Fran McCaffrey, though.
Yeah, he hired Fran McCaffrey. I forgot. I mean, that's the point right there, though. Like, Kirk Ferentz is a really good football coach, and he's had him under his wing for 17 years, right? So all through all the ups and downs, I think the fact other hires, right, Fran McCaffrey we talked about, all the other sports have had success in its own, where I can't name all their coaches that's been hired under his oversight. I think there is a lot to be applied for his time at Iowa, but obviously with accomplishments there's always failures.
Obviously the facilities too, did a great job with all the facilities,
right,
and fundraising. I mean, at the end of the day, that's what that job's about, you know. It's about being able to rally that fundraising, and that's what he was really good at. It just is. Yeah, I it'll be interesting to see who they hire. We got to figure out who Brian Ferentz's new boss will be.
Well, that's the thing too. It's this retirement, Jared, is coming at such a bizarre time, which makes me feel like A, he was just done with everything that was happening, or B, there's some internal issues that were forcing him out, right? Like with the time of everything, the gambling incidents, Brian Ferentz. You can throw Kirk Ferentz in there with people wanting kind of a new style with their football team after so many years. I mean, it's just coming at a really bizarre time. He's pretty powerful AD. He's one of the most powerful ADs, I think, in the country right now with what he's held with the football committee and how long of a tenure he's been with the Big Ten.
And it'll be interesting for whoever comes next too, because there's just the reality that they're going to probably have to hire some new coaches here in the not so distant future, you know, in some high profile sports, just with some of their coaches getting older.
Exactly. I mean, Kirk Ferentz and Fran, those are two guys that the next ADs are going to have to hire. And those two sports obviously are the revenue producing sports for every university in the country on campuses. And those are the two most important hires that, I mean, those two sports, I mean, you look at it from a sport instance, Jared, but you also got to look at it from a tuition point, right? Like a lot of kids go to schools because of sometimes how awesome their basketball and football programs are, right?
Mm-hmm.
That college lifestyle. So that shapes your whole university right there with those two hires.
What kind of qualities would you like to see in the next AD?
You know, I tweeted about it a little bit after it happened. Of course, the news happens right after we record. I swear, we have like some bad juju with our podcast with headlines. But we need a guy that is, as much as I dislike the Cyclones with my time in Iowa, I think their AD is a wonderful example of someone that is strong ties to the university, obviously, that has he stands up for his what he believes in, right? And I think he's been really strong at NIL, a guy like that. And I think that's the most important quality when you're looking for a new AD, is a guy that's strong in NIL, that's willing to adapt and change. And I'm going to say that again, is willing to adapt and change. If someone is not willing to adapt and change in this environment, college athletics, they're setting up the university for failure. That's number one. That's the number one priority. If they want to be stuck in their own ways, they don't want to fix anything that's going to be changed by either legislation or the NCAA as a whole, their program's going to be left in the dust. I mean, everyone knows that now. And I think there's instances already with certain universities in Iowa that have adapted and they've changed quickly. Iowa could have been one of those schools, but for whatever reason, they're delayed. And that's something, another failure that occurred under the Barta administration.
Yeah. I mean, I think that anybody who wants one of those jobs in today's climate has to be willing to work with those things, you know, otherwise hiring anybody who is not willing to work hard on those things feels like a massive administration failure, frankly.
Yeah. I mean, you look at too, the many legislations that's been passed through NIL, right? You know, I always look back at my experience when I was going through my last year, I was debating on coming back, right? And I was fighting for NIL legislation to occur within the state of Iowa. And for whatever reason, I didn't have enough backing, right? And that can go as another instance of someone that's strong enough to adapt and change and want college athletes to truly have the best experience. And the best experience for these college athletes are going to be an AD that is willing to adapt and change, and they're willing to hold the college athletes, their voices higher than themselves. And for whatever reason, ADs nowadays they're not willing to do either of those two in a lot of universities across the country. And that's why I pride Iowa State's AD, because I think he's been very strong on willing to accept change and willing to listen to their college athletes, listen to these NIL collectives, and want them to do what's best for these college athletes. So I do give them a lot of applause. I think they were really fast moving on a lot of instances when NIL was happening.
Why do you feel that hasn't happened at Iowa?
Loss of words for me, man. Like it kind of hurts me personally, because, and that's a great question, because I fought so hard for NIL, and I'm not the only one. Like there's Geo Baker, Isaiah Livers, there's many athletes across the country that helped me, many athletes previously, but I feel like we're the first people that kind of made it public. And we met with NCAA president, obviously all this stuff. And that was right in the backyard of Iowa, right? Like I was a current student athlete at Iowa. And I knew all these changes that were going to occur. Like we had meetings, I tried to pass legislation. I was working when I was passed, I was working with NCPA and the National College Player Association to pass other legislation, lobby, and help other schools across the country to have good bills for their own states. So their college athletes are protected, but for whatever reason, Iowa stayed. I didn't have any personal contact with really anyone at the University of Iowa when we're going through this process. And I'm not saying I would have changed it me personally, but I would have offered some sort of expertise to want the university to succeed. It's not like I'm an athlete here that wants only basketball to be to have a success.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. That's a tough question to answer for me, because I hold university so true to my heart, and I want them to do well from sport to sport.
I wonder, or just what do you think about now how every state, it seems like, is making changes to their NIL laws constantly, updating them, not always probably for the best reasons, more for their own competitive reasons than for the actual benefit of athletes. What do you think about that? Like, that's obviously becoming a pretty significant issue across the country as just more and more states do these things. I know Missouri's done it. I know Arkansas's done it. I think Texas has made some changes to their law. I mean, and it's all in the name of competition more than anything else.
Yeah, I mean, you look at these legislators that are passing these bills locally and statewide, they're fans of their universities, right? They either went to their school and they want their schools to succeed economically, and they want them to succeed sports-wise, because that will help the whole state in the end, right? Looking at a macro perspective at all. So they're smart from that aspect. A lot of these guys are passing bills that are less restrictive on these college athletes. Now there's some that are still kind of restrictive, and be part-time with NCPA. We've worked with several athletes across the country on them backing certain bills in their state. Like Georgia had a clause in their NIL bill where I don't know the exact percentage, but a certain percentage of the NIL compensation was going to be sent back to other athletes across the campuses on other sports, which makes no sense at all. Who else goes out in the public and make money for themselves and they have to give it back to their work, wherever, who they work for? That doesn't make any sense. It's not fair. So that's something we try to help and change, like little wording like that across the country. For the most part, a lot of these legislators are smart, right? Florida did the same thing. They made an amendment that they had a kind of a little too restrictive college athlete bill. Granted, they're one of the first ones that introduced it way back then, but they're smart. They want their schools to succeed. And if that means giving their college athletes more protections and more opportunity to make money, legislators are smart. They know what they're doing, man. But NCAA, they don't want that to happen. There's so many ADs that still don't want that to happen because they're not lining their own pockets anymore. So I think in the end, there's going to be it's going to be the same thing with employment status. And I just like how the NIL legislation was brought out, there's going to be a state that passes something and all these other legislators want to jump on it because it's going to hurt their schools if they don't.
How do you feel about the schools that are rolling their collectives into their foundations now?
That's something I think we talked about a couple months ago when it started becoming way more production across the country. It's something I didn't expect to be so tied to the universities. And I don't think it's necessarily a good thing. When you look at NIL, you look at going out into the public, working with businesses and making money, which I'm not saying NIL collectives aren't doing that. It's just more tied to the universities. And in turn, it's hurting the transfer portal and people wanting to go to these schools and hurting chances like Iowa and Iowa State to get some of these athletes because they don't have as strong a foundation as like an Alabama or an Arkansas or SEC school.
Texas A&M is the big one that I know of has done it. Yeah.
Right. Texas A&M too. So from that aspect, more restriction, I don't think is necessarily a bad thing, even though I've been such a proponent of college athletes being paid as much money as they can. There needs to be some restriction for that because universities shouldn't be so tied to making NIL deals for these athletes. That should be something that's personally done by those athletes because businesses want to work with that athlete because they're great people or they're great ambassadors for the program, not because they want to transfer to the school and make money by the NIL collective. I don't think that's how it should work. And I think legislation will make that a little better.
Do you think that this can help lead to the employment thing though? If it is more closely tied to the schools, but I just don't know if some of the inducement activity things go away under any, like, unless you've got some sort of structured contracts in place.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. Again, we've talked about that too. Structure contracts and having employment status is the only way forward, right, for this to all intertwine and work with NIL. There's always going to be inducements, though. I mean, we know that. Anyone that has a common sense in sports in general, whether professionally or collegiately, even in high school, there's incentives for anything to go anywhere. Just like you're in the workforce, like there's going to be different inducements to go work at company A compared to company B. That has to happen because that's how the competitive market is set up for any industry. So I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing to have inducements because the better schools are going to get the better players like they always have. That's not new idea. That's always happened since the start of the NCAA.
All right. So I know Nick Saban's had some interesting things to say that you wanted to react to, but before we do that, I wanted to talk about Hinterland. Hinterland Music Festival, August 4th through 6th. Coming up down in St. Charles, Iowa. Didn't we talk about this one day? We did, right?
Yeah. You talked about how a big Zach Bryan fan I am, dude. And I'm going to his concert in Sioux Falls, man. And he's in St. Charles, I think, too.
Yeah, he's going to be at Hinterland. Yeah. August 4th through the 6th in St. Charles. Not only will he be there, but Bon Iver will be there, who's been a big act for a long time. Maggie Rogers, Sylvan Esso, Noah Kahan, Orville Peck, Wallows, Angel Olsen. I think I'm going to try and pull up for this. This should be a really good time. You can get your tickets, camping passes right now, hinterlandiowa.com. Zach Bryan is one of the biggest acts out there right now. So for them to be able to get him is absolutely huge.
He's selling out everywhere. Like, I was in a lottery to get his tickets for his personal tour. Like, the fact he's doing a tour in Des Moines, I don't think people realize how big of a name Zach Bryan is now. He is like, he's going to be like the ultimate guy in country music. He already is.
Yeah. And that's going to be a really good time. We're going to keep telling you guys more about it here over the next month or so here on the podcast. That's August 4th through the 6th in St. Charles, Iowa. Find out more, buy tickets at hinterlandiowa.com. You had the quotes from Nick Saban that you wanted to react to. He had some interesting things to say about NIL and the world of college sports today. What do you got for me?
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. Since we're on the college athlete protections, everything that we're talking about, I mean, this is just fits in perfectly for the AD talk. And granted, I think Coach Saban, before I read this quote, Coach Saban's in such a weird position, Jared. Like, he can literally do whatever he wants because he has such a hard backing by the university. He has such a hard backing by his track record. Like, his record speaks for itself, who he puts in the NFL, who he recruits, how many national championships he has, how many times they get to the playoffs. So it's not odd that he's making a quote like this, but they had an SEC, I don't know the exact event it was, but it was
the meetings. Yeah, their SEC yeah. Spring meetings. Yeah.
Yeah. And he had a bunch of these quotes, but the one that struck me is he said to the reporter, it's not really a business, it's revenue producing, and nobody takes a profit. I don't know how these coaches can continually stand up here.
Can you say it again? Can you say it again? I don't understand what he's trying to say.
He said, this is talking about, I don't know the exact question, but is talking about NIL, NIL, the National Labor Relations Board had a complaint that was finally filed actually by our company or by our organization, CPA, about employment status essentially for the state of California. So this topic was being brought up in this press conference, and make the quote short, he said, it's not really a business, it's revenue producing, and nobody takes a profit. Try to explain that quote to me, Jared. Explain it to me like I'm five.
Okay. I think he's trying to say it produces revenue that is in turn spent.
Right.
So there's no profit. There's no profit. There's just revenue.
But here's the thing. He's making $11 million a year. 11, Jared.
Do you think Nick Saban's doing $11 million worth of work?
I would argue yes, actually. Yes, I would. I would.
I think actually there's a case to be made that Nick Saban may be underpaid, frankly.
Yeah, right. But that doesn't mean it. How are you going to stand up there and say that, though, when you're making $11 million?
Yeah. Well, yeah, no. There certainly is a way to you know, that we could sit there and say, well, it could be a profit-producing thing if you guys didn't waste your money, you know.
I'll end up reading this whole quote here because this will fit in perfectly. He goes, reinvest every cent that gets made into two non-revenue sports, two scholarships, to a lot of things that create a lot of opportunity for a lot of people, which is really, really good. So we're not talking about the same thing. It's not really a business. It's revenue producing and nobody takes a profit. All the money gets reinvested in other opportunities for other people, whether it's facilities, whether it's scholarships, whether it's opportunities for people to play.
Yeah. Okay. So I do understand what he's trying to say there, but I get where you're coming from too. It's like, and again, it comes back to if athletic departments didn't waste their money on spending, giving ridiculous salaries and things like that, then this would not be, that would not be a problem, you know? Yeah. But the problem is that these people are making all of this money that then in turn, it's like, yeah, think how many more opportunities you guys could give to student athletes if they didn't pay you $11 million, Nick, you know? Right.
And on top of, I mean, the COVID year is a perfect example of how crappy these universities are with their money, right? Like how they took one, granted it is a once in a lifetime global pandemic, like it or not, argue or not, a pandemic did happen. All this stuff happened with these schools, shutdowns everywhere. And how much was Iowa? They were out $55, $60 million because of the lockdown.
I think that they're, yeah, they have like a debt service that's like $245 million.
Yeah, and it's tied back to athletic department, right? Like it's tied to taxpayers' money, to tuition-paying dollars, right? I believe so. The loan that was taken out is through a different department. Like that right there is idiotic to me. Like you're spending how much money on these salaries, how much money on all these athletic administrators' salaries, and we're down that much money on all these facilities as well. And some of these facilities are great, right? They help recruitment, their inducements, but these athletes still get nothing. Even with the scholarships they get, Jared, it is essentially bare minimum for what they should be paid.
I saw something last week that was about it was a tweet about debt services in college athletics, like how much debt different schools have, how different athletic departments have. I was like, I don't know, top five, top 10, somewhere in that range. Number one was Cal. They had like $500 million in debt service because they had to renovate their stadium. Get this shit, dude. Their stadium, their football stadium is built on a fault reservoir or whatever it's called, you know, like a fault line. There could be an earthquake that could split their football stadium literally in half. The football field runs right down a fault line. Whose idea was that?
You know what's crazy? They thought it was so cool. They're like, "Hey, let's build it right on the fault line. We'll attract so many people." I bet that's exactly.
They thought it was so cool that they then spent $500 million renovating the stadium to keep it in the same location.
Yeah, it's crazy. As idiotic that sounds, I guarantee you there's numerous other insane, whether facilities, like certain aspects of how that's similar to a lot of these other schools and how they deal with their money too, like how they spend their money. You can find hundreds, I bet, out of some of these Power Five conferences.
Do you think if there was an earthquake in the middle of a Cal football game, it would be like the scene in The Dark Knight in The Dark Knight Rises when Bane comes out onto the field and Hines Ward falls into the, or scores a touchdown as all the players fall into the hole behind him?
I'm not gonna lie, that's one of my favorite movie scenes ever.
Oh, all time great movie scene. All time
great. The guy's just running with a football and everything's collapsing behind him.
It's Hines Ward, isn't it?
Was it?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was. Yeah. NFL or Super Bowl champion Hines Ward.
Yeah. Well, he didn't run fast enough.
Well, he did. He made the end zone. Oh, nobody else. Yeah, nobody else. No. I thought made it. Yeah,
should have had the ball.
That's what's going to happen at Cal. Well, until now, I saw they did build this new thing that made it to where the stadium will flex back and forth if there's an earthquake.
Well, at least they spent their money a little more reasonably. Let's build a flexible football stadium on a fault line.
They basically made a football stadium into a waterbed and it'll just rise up on one side when the earth just starts shaking.
It's ridiculous.
All right. You got anything else that you want to add before I've got one more story for you?
I think I got everything off my chest. I feel like I talk a lot that episode.
You're good. I got one more story for you.
I was going to say, Jared needs some insight here.
No, you're good.
I do want to ask you, I want to go back to the AD talk a little bit before we get into these stories. Do you think it's hard to word this correctly, politically correct, I guess you could say. Do you think Gary Barta's time at Iowa was reasonably, like, there's reason behind some of these lawsuits? I don't know how to explain this. Like,
do I think that they were substantiated?
Yes.
Yes. I would say by and large, most of them were probably substantiated. One of them even went all the way to trial, didn't it?
Yeah. One of them did, but
they lost in court. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that was the one that made up the majority of the whatever 15 million, right? Yeah. That they had to award in damages. Yeah. I'll admit, I thought there, this isn't funny. It was ironic that earlier you said all the success they've had everywhere from field hockey on down, and field hockey is the sport that.
Hey, they did have success at field hockey.
They just
took a little bit of failures to get to that success.
Yeah, failures. That's what we'll call it. Just a little bit of casual discrimination. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know, man. I feel like there's so much. I'm not rooting on the side of Gary Barta here for how that was handled. Iowa dealt with so much shit with his time at Iowa. Like, it's crazy to think about, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's hard to even wrap my head around even my time there with, I don't know, man. Like, you're there for 17 years. Like, I'm surprised even after.
I mean, you were there for most of it, so.
Yeah, I mean, I was there for half, basically. Basically. I don't know, though. It's like, I do understand at that level how much power you have. I do agree, like, if there's that much that occurs under your wing, which makes me surprised, like, he was there for 17 years, I guess, is what I'm getting at.
I think there's a lot of people who are surprised.
Yeah.
And I think that's why people have said what they have, is that there's a probably pretty strong case to be made that it was long overdue, frankly. Right. You know,
that doesn't take
away from your experience. Like, I'm sure he is a perfectly fine person, you know, like, yeah. I've never interacted with Gary Barta. So it's like, so that doesn't take away from your perspective, but it's also, I think there can be a reality that, you know, it was just time. You know.
Yeah. No, I agree with that. I don't know. I was just curious because obviously you're from the outside, like, you're on the other side of Iowa State, so you guys know everything from a totally different perspective, other than being a Hawkeye. So it felt like at some point, this is the last thing I say. I felt like it was some point after the last lawsuit. I don't even know who ended up filing it, but the racial bias or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
That was
After they settled that one. Yeah.
Yeah. It almost felt like he was on the way out, one, within that, but two, like, people were kind of just done with how everything was being handled after that point, like, within around him, like, people were just ready for a new voice with the University of Iowa.
Well, and I think with the way that they tried to settle it and have it be paid by the state,
right,
too, that didn't help anything either. You know, it was just a tough situation.
Yeah, it's hard to get taxpayers to pay for something that they definitely really didn't have anything to do with.
Yeah, exactly. I think it was just one of those things where it's just time. You know, there's been enough stuff that has popped up. It was certainly time. All right, my one more story I got for you. This comes from the Associated Press. The headline, beloved New York swan babies rescued after mother was eaten, police say.
Aww.
The village of Manlius in upstate New York is mourning the loss of Faye, a swan who was stolen from the town's pond over the weekend along with her four cygnets. Baby swans, apparently.
Cygnets.
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 Cygnets. Cygnets.
Baguettes.
Or baby swans were recovered from but officials say the mama swan was eaten. The mother swan was consumed, Manlius Mayor Paul Warhol said Wednesday. Sad to say, but that's what they did. Three teenagers were arrested Tuesday on charges including grand larceny and criminal mischief in connection with the swan napping. Manlius Police Sergeant Ken Hatter said. Apparently, these kids stole the town swan and ate it.
They ate the swan?
They ate the swan.
No, that's messed up, dude. Is that illegal? Can you eat swan?
Oh.
You can, is that, dude.
It is, the first thing that popped up on here says, it is not treason to kill a swan and it doesn't carry the death penalty. What is that?
Treason?
Why do we jump to treason?
Like, why don't overthrowing a government?
Why don't we eat swans?
Wait. How do we jump to treason with from that?
I don't know. Apparently, they're like really special in the UK.
Oh, well, we don't care about the UK. We are, America already dealt with that.
Unlike the UK, in the US, it's perfectly legal to hunt swan if you have the right permits, but people still don't eat them. I would imagine that it's perfectly legal to hunt swan unless you're hunting the swans that would like were brought to upstate New York. They're not native birds of upstate New York. They, I think, are considered to be an invasive species, even. And now probably not legal to hunt those and eat them. But I think there are other places. Yeah, I don't know. That just is a weird thing. That's just a weird thing. I've never heard of anybody eating swan before.
How old were they?
Hunting and cooking swans. Tundra swans are legal game in 6 states. But hunting and cooking them is controversial because swans are loaded with cultural baggage. What does this come? This comes from Hunter, Gather, Cook.
Cultural baggage? What are we talking about?
I have no idea. You can hunt swans in Utah.
All right. Well, they do things a little differently down in Utah, Jared. We know that. I'm baffled. I didn't know that was a bird you can hunt or kill or eat. All three.
Okay. So apparently in the Bible, it says that eating swans is unclean. Leviticus 11:18. There you go. That's why we don't eat swans. It's unclean.
I'll be honest, I'm confirmed Catholic. I don't remember ever reading anything about a. I don't remember ever being told.
All right, well, now we got to look up Leviticus 11:18.
Dude, there's no way. That's in the Bible?
Yes. All right. Let me read it. It has a whole list of things. You must not eat any of the following birds. Eagles, owls, hawks, falcons, buzzards, vultures, crows, ostriches, seagulls, storks, herons, pelicans, cormorants, hoopoes, and bats. Okay, that.
Okay,
I mean, the swan and the pelican.
All those
and
are
the horned
pretty
owl.
I mean, who's gonna
we
eat
wouldn't
an
eat
eagle?
Any of those things. We wouldn't eat any of those things.
No, a normal person wouldn't eat those birds. Is a bat a bird?
No, but apparently by the definition in the Bible, I mean, you know,
what
they
is
wrote
it,
the Bible.
Man?
It's a, aren't they marsupials
or whatever? They're like kangaroos, aren't they?
They're just mammals, it says.
Oh. Dude, I'm shocked. Wow. I didn't know you would throw this news on me.
Yeah, they killed and they hunted it down, but they saved the babies. They saved the babies at least.
So the police saved the babies or the kids saved the babies?
I think they did. The kids just didn't eat the babies, and then the police saved them.
Oh, they just thought we can eat a swan, but we can't have the baby. That's where we're gonna cross the line, guys.
Yeah, we'll draw the line at the baby swans. Yeah, draw the line.
Don't eat the babies.
Don't take your swan to New York. Don't take your swan.
Now the swans are orphans.
R.I.P. What was its name again? Faye. R.I.P. Faye. Rest in power.
I feel bad.
Hey.
Those kids, though. Is that a felony? What is that?
I can't imagine it's a felony. I wouldn't think so. Yeah, it's treason. Committed treason against Manlius in Manlius, New York, the village of Manlius.
Wow. They're getting the chair for eating a swan. Wow.
Oh, and it has a mate named Manny. Now Manny has to swim by himself.
Where was this at? New York? It was upstate New York?
Yeah.
I was going to say, if it was in Utah, Manny would just probably find someone new.
What, you think Manny's a city boy?
No, I'm saying, like, if there were in Utah, it would be likely the Swan was a Mormon.
Yeah, oh.
By numbers average.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I know. All right, let's end this podcast so that I can turn my fan on because it's hot as hell in here. I'll talk to you later. Talk to everybody next week. Peace.
Iowa everywhere.